Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
What's going on? You are here live on the Golong Media Channel, and this is the Boxing Source Radio Show. I'm your host, James Bell, lead boxing analyst for the Cohort Tooth on Sports, and contributing article writer, so to speak, for multiple blog. So you'll catch my articles on thechonsports.com, among other boxing blog sites and sports blog sites. But here, you're here to talk boxing, to have a 1 hour live show. If you want to get in and have your take on boxing, you could call in at 347-237-5539. That is 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on cue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. Have a few things that we're going to cover in this particular episode, going through a couple of notable results that did happen over the course of the weekend. Specifically, one particular fight card that the boxing community, so to speak, is talking about. And that, pretty much entails what happened over in Hollywood, California, in a venue called the Avalon. As Golden Boy Promotions held a fight card. It was five fights over at the Avalon, and it was broadcast on Facebook Live. And so you have five fights on Facebook Live, and the main event was Jesus Rojas against Jojo Diaz, or Joseph Diaz Jr., for the WBA Featherweight Championship. But just going through, the results of the previous four fights, you had Jose Vargas taking on Leonardo Reyes. Jose Vargas came in there at 4-0. From, coming from Pasadena, so he was pretty much around the area. 4-0, had, a couple of knockouts before taking on Leonardo Reyes, and Reyes came in there with a record of 7 wins and 17 losses. So this fight here in the super bantamweight division, Jose Vargas undefeated going up against someone that was 7-17. And for those that, could have kind of seen what would happen beforehand, someone that's, had a record of 7-17 and, had lost his last four fights. Basically got washed by Jose Vargas, and Leonardo Reyes lost by KO and fell to 7 wins and 18 losses, while Jose Vargas 7-0. So that's the first fight and it was on Facebook Live. You could probably still watch it on Facebook through the Golden Boy Facebook page. So you'll be able to see Jose Vargas knocking out Leonardo Reyes in that particular bout. You also had Aaron McKenna Mandeville, and you had Aaron McKenna from Ireland, a young kid there, 19 years old, going up against Rolando Mandeville, who was 10-4. Had lost his previous fight by TKO against Will Madeira. Coming up in this bout here against Aaron McKenna, just seeing here what McKenna could do. And you had, this guy here at welterweight, he's, 19 years old, but had at welterweight, he's 6'1". So that's, that's kind of a, it's kind of an interesting thing right there to start out at welterweight in his, professional career at 6'1". So, depending on how successful he becomes over the course of his pro career, you may see him, grow out of the welterweight division there, seeing that, just being 19, it'd be like a couple of years, you may see, basically see him grow out from 147 pounds and probably move up to maybe 154, 160. But here for the time being, going up against Rolando Mandeville, he, kind of like worked his way through the fight, kind of like pumping his left jab and doing a few things there. But, also got caught a few times by Mandeville, but nothing, too serious to really hurt him. He did land a few good right hands on Mandeville over the course of the fight. We were seeing that fight live, and I thought that McKenna would have been able to at least put Mandeville down to the canvas, but he was not able to do so over the course of this particular fight, and so it went over to the scorecards, and McKenna ended up getting the unanimous decision win over Mandeville to stay undefeated, and he moves to 5-0. So giving Mandeville his fifth loss of his professional career. But you'll probably see McKenna get more often, I would say, here, within the course of the year, or of course next year, especially if he's going to be part of Golden Boy Promotions. I think that they'll kind of like try to push him out there, for the Irish crowd in order for, Irish boxing fans to see him and, other boxing fans to see him. So that's going to be something there to look out for. Continuing on, you had also what went down in the super welterweight division as Ferdinand Carabion faced Jose Carlos Rivera, and that looked like another fight where it seemed like Jose Carlos Rivera really didn't have notable fights. That even lost to a guy that was 4-7-1, and also lost to Peter Kamukov in March of this year by unanimous decision before picking up two quick wins over the past 2 months and then facing Ferdinand Carabion, who was 9-0, coming from Armenia, but now residing in North Hollywood. So he was, there for a local bout. He's had, many of his fights within the Los Angeles area up to this point, facing guys that were, had either losing records or only had like a few professional fights under the belt. Except, you know, a few KOs before fighting Jose Carlos Rivera, but here he was able to outbox Jose Carlos Rivera to a unanimous decision, a win, moving to 10-0. So he is going to be 10-0 right now. Moving on to continue his pro career with an undefeated record. We'll probably see, you know, a little bit more. Coming from him in the near future. While, you know, Jose Carlos Rivera will probably be in a, you know, mid-card or, you know, lower-card level in some of these boxing events that's going to be going on out there. So, Jose Carlos Rivera falls to 6-4. Like I said, Fernand Carabian goes to 10-0. Then, next up, you have, as the co-feature, you have Jonathan Navarro going up against Damon Allen. And these two guys were, you know, undefeated going into the bouts. You had Jonathan Navarro coming in there at 14-0 with Damon Allen coming in there at 15-0-1. And that you had, I mean, this one kind of, I would say is the about to see like where both of these guys were at this point of their careers. Navarro is also a local guy, coming from East LA, had a majority of his fights over at either the Belasco Theater in LA or in the Fantasy Springs Casino over in Indio, California. Where you had Damon Allen coming from Philadelphia, that's had his string of fights going across the country there. So that is, you know, what we had for this particular co-feature bout. Basically saw something where, you know, Jonathan Navarro kind of like pushed himself to be the better, pretty much like the better overall fighter in there. And he had, he had Damon Allen in trouble, going into the, going into the sixth round. And, I would say that Allen tried to, swing and, try to get a big punch in, but he was missing a few shots here and there. And then, by the sixth round, he got, caught with a few good shots out there and, ended up getting himself trouble. I would say pretty much in the seventh round, I would say that, he was a little bit, Allen was a little bit off in a lot of the shots that he was trying to throw coming into that seventh round, even though he like kind of, connected a few times with a few things, but
he was just trying to basically dodge, you know, a lot of punches there. And he got caught with a, you know, basically with a, you know, good shot that stunned him a bit while he was, you know, on the ropes. And, you know, when he was, you know, on the ropes, he kind of like paused for a little bit. And, you know, with that, the, you know, the referee kind of saw that, you know, kind of saw that he was stunned. And, you know, with that, the referee stepped in to stop the fight in the seventh round that, you know, pretty much came after the, you know, I would say the one, what was it, like the, well, 1.5 minutes left. Because, you know, pretty much like around the 1:40 mark, you could see that Allen was still swinging, but once he was, you know, ducking a few punches, and then he got caught with a little punch that backed him up, and then he was, you know, stunned, and then what happened was, you know, Jonathan Navarro stepped in and gave him a couple of punches, and the referee just went ahead and stepped in and stopped the bout there, you know, ending it, for Damon Allen. And Navarro moves to 15-0-0, while Damon Allen suffers the first loss of his career, knockout loss. That was a, you know, probably be a big setback for Damon Allen there. You know, with getting a key loss. I would say that, you know, this kind of like helps, you know, put Navarro a little bit up in the rankings there for super lightweight, but he's going to have to get a few more fights in to kind of like put his name out there within that 140-pound division. And, of course, over at the top of the division, you're going to have the World Boxing Super Series that's going to be happening with a lot of the key fighters participating in that tournament, you know, including Josh Taylor, including Regis Philbrass. You know, we'll also have, you know, the top guys that were in the 140 regions, and Ivan Baranchik and Anthony Idjit. So relevant there. So once all of that kind of like clears itself out, you may see, you know, an appearance by Jonathan Navarro in one of those rankings within those organizations. But for right now, having this win under his belt is probably going to help him out in, you know, the near future there. So that was the whole feature that you had. Now going into the main event, you had Jesus Rojas going up against Joseph Jojo Diaz, and it was for the WBA Featherweight Championship. Now, the cool part is for this, telling you off the bat, is that it was for the WBA Featherweight Championship for Jesus Rojas. Why? Well, Jesse Diaz and Jojo Diaz, who, you know, came up and was going up the ranks and was undefeated and had a minor featherweight title. Was able to work himself to be the number one contender for the WBA featherweight title in February this year. Russell Jr., that fight ended up being in May this year, and Gary Russell Jr. ended decision to keep his WWE title. And then months later, JoJo Diaz was placed in to challenge for the WBA featherweight championship there, the regular featherweight championship. As you have Leo Santa Cruz as the WBA super champion there at featherweight. Going into the weigh-in on Friday, you had, Jesus Rojas being able to make weight, but you had, Joseph JoJo Diaz, who, came in there and tried to weigh in, but ended up being...
Hold on here. Looks like you had some type of issue going on with the connection, so had like a little technical difficulty, but we are back here now. Hopefully we're, all the way in and good. I was just, talking about what was happening or about to happen in the fight between Jesus Rojas and JoJo Diaz for that WBA featherweight championship. And I was just saying that, in the weigh-in on Friday, we found out that JoJo Diaz ended up missing weight. So he couldn't win the WBA featherweight championship after basically getting a second chance immediately to fight for a featherweight title. So that's what we have here so far. Just adding in a caller in from the 813. Tell us your name, where you're calling from.
Hey, what's up, Jay? This is Terrell calling in from Tampa. Once again, glad to contribute and just listen to a great, great show in regards to the sport of boxing. Sir, I've been MIA for the last few Sundays, but never just but still watching and just when it comes to everything, all things in terms of boxing news. So once again, glad to be here and talk.
All right, no doubt there, Brother Terrell. Glad for you to call in. Getting in here to talk about the fight that happened between Jesus Rojas and JoJo Diaz, and basically what went down between the two. Just saying here that it was a a fairly good fight between the two. Kind of was like a little bit of a back and forth type of fight between Rojas and Diaz. You had Diaz there, of course, doing his general thing of working the body and trying to chop Rojas down while Rojas was still right in front of him, still working, still trying to pace themselves pace himself out there. What you basically had was JoJo Diaz, basically holding off what Jesus Rojas was doing out there, and he ended up getting the unanimous decision victory with a score of 115-113, 116-112, and 117-111 to move to 27 wins and one loss. But he didn't win the title, the WBA title, for being overweight. And with the WBA rules, even if you lose as a champion, if that challenger was overweight, you get to keep the belt. So Jesus Rojas loses, but he keeps the WBA title there. So looking like, we had a score, one score of 7-5, one score of 8-4, and one score of 9-3 for Joseph JoJo Diaz. There for him to win that fight, but not win the WBA title.
Yeah, I didn't get to consume this fight, but so I'm glad to get a quick update on it. But it's funny because, I mean, so many times, and especially here recently, that we've seen a fighter lose their opportunity on the scales and everything before they even enter into the ring. I think recently we saw, last year, year before last, something like that, Broner, I think it was at 140, I think it was, something like that, where he failed to make weight and was stripped of the title and couldn't fight and couldn't win it. despite the fact that he didn't make weight. I mean, there's a lot of different examples here in recent times, but it's funny. The penultimate moment of your career is a fight for that belt. I mean, there's so much that you go through in planning your career in order to get in line and get an actual title opportunity, and yet you lose it on the scales. Is there ever a valid reason for that? You know, lack of training, lack of focus, lack of diet, lack of dieting, proper dieting, stuff like that. And it's just funny. Like I said, you weigh all the time, and then you miss your opportunity on the scales. It's just a shame that we hear about that so many times again.
Yeah, and you know, here with this particular case of, you know, Joseph Jojo Diaz, who had already had a shot at a featherweight title, and you know, ended up losing, you know, over in the MGM National Harbor against Gary Russell Jr. And then, you know, soon, you know, pretty much like three months later, it wasn't even, you know, a couple weeks after him coming off that loss that he was, you know, basically put in to go up against, you know, Jesus Rojas for that WBA regular featherweight championship. But, I mean, it said he was like 2 pounds overweight and they couldn't really shed that off or cut that off. So, I mean, maybe it's something to where he just, you know, really can't put himself at that weight anymore, or, you know, just that, you know, he wasn't really fully prepared in a camp atmosphere or training atmosphere to get himself down in weight and then fully train for this fight against Jesus Rojas. But even with that, he was still able to get the win by unanimous decision, and it'd be interesting to see what happens next for Joseph Diaz if he ends up moving to super featherweight, or you know, tries to see if he can give it one more go at the featherweight division. And then at the same time, you have Jesus Rojas, who you know loses the bout but keeps the WBA regular title. So it's like, who knows what you know is next for Rojas? I mean, he had you know, he basically won. They basically put, I mean, I say they put this, you know, world featherweight title up for grabs after, you know, Rojas had been the interim title. So it was like they gave him the regular championship after him being the interim champion. So that kind of is a strange situation in reference to the WBA. That, you know, has been a topic of conversation in the boxing circles over the past few days, that somebody in particular got involved with a couple of days ago. So we may talk about that here a little bit later, but just seeing there, Terrell, you know, what else would you say is you know, next in store for Jojo Diaz after, you know, first having his loss to Gary Russell Jr. and then now getting this win here last night?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't have my rankings and order in front of me right now, so I really can't speak a whole lot on what maybe next for this guy. But, I mean, but like I said, looks like he's probably going to need to move up in weight at this point. And even just going back to what we talked about with him losing the fight on the scales. Keep in mind that you typically have a 30-day weigh-in that an organization keeps, right? And on top of that, at this level, you know your body. You know what you're doing. You know that if you're outgrown or weight class, you know those things. And it's just, like I said, it's just a shame if you know you're outgrown, like for Charlo, for example, the one at 160. He knew he was too big for 154. So he went ahead and made the decision, despite the fact that his brother was there, and they shared that bond, been in the same weight class. Despite that, he had to sacrifice that and move up to 160. And I said, you know your body. You got these 30-day weigh-ins, 10-day weigh-ins, things like that you're undergoing. So you keep in mind you're a professional boxer at this point. This ain't no amateurs or nothing like that, so... So, like I said, this next logical move, like I said, may be just to go ahead and move up. you know, and see what face, what's up there that he can face.
Yeah, I mean, he could, you know, have his options there at the super featherweight division. Or if you have, like, you know, champions like Ronte Davis and Miguel Burchelt and Tevin Farmer, who, you know, just won the IBF super featherweight title. So he could get a couple of good matches or matchups there. Also, you know, Jisrael Corrales is there, Castellanos is in the super featherweight division, and Francisco Vargas is in that super featherweight division. So he could, you know, get a few good matches in there before challenging for a world title in that division. And like I said, you know, him being under Golden Boy, you know, you probably could get those chances sooner rather than later there. So that is one part. Yeah.
Real quick, before you move on, speaking of Tevin Farmer, so the word out there is that he may likely face Gervonta Davis in his next fight. And keep in mind, he just won this belt, right? So give me your quick thoughts in regards to, you just acquired a belt, right? You haven't even made a defense of that belt yet. Should you go and face such a dangerous opponent acquiring a belt? And keep in mind, you, like, once again, like, so you worked so hard to get into position to get a belt, and you finally get it. And we saw Tevin Farmer over the course of the last year or so with I think it was a gunshot wound and stuff like that. He lost a fight where he kind of looked, in a sense, mediocre, but he bounced right back and got a title. So despite the war worse between him and Tank going on, that which is popular these days with Twitter and stuff like that, would you, if you imagine him, would you put him in a ring against Tank Davis, knowing how dangerous of a fight that could be? I mean, you just got the title, so I want to say, I'm not saying you go on thinking that you're going to lose the fight, but like, it's a dangerous opponent. So you want to get a couple defenses and get used to having that belt around your waist before you, in a sense, just go in this, going to a high threat fight like that. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, even though this particular fight had been talked about since the beginning of this year, I really didn't see, you know, Farmer beating Tank Davis. I mean, Farmer does have, you know, some type of boxing skill as far as, like, offensive, you know, strategy is concerned, pumping the jab. He does have length and reach, but when it comes to, you know, actually getting in the ring against someone like Tank Davis, who is a workaholic, then he's going to be in a lot of trouble going up against Tank Davis. And so if he goes into, like, his next fight defending that title against Tank, I think that's something to where it's probably where they feel that it would be a main event type of thing, where they kind of like see it as a showcase fight, where he could probably get a good amount of money from it. But, you know, right now he would like lose that fight, probably lose that fight significantly. And it would be, I don't think it would be a good career move to do something like that, because I don't know what other options he would have if he went straight into that fight against Tank Davis and then lost. And, you know, it would probably take him a while to challenge for, you know, another world title, particularly in the 130-pound division. You have, like, other guys that are, you know, possibly moving up from 126 pounds to 130 pounds. And in particular, Gary Russell Jr., if he moves up to 130 after Farmer Davis fight, with Davis winning, then I don't see, like, somebody like Tevin Farmer being like Gary Russell Jr. either.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that. Like I said, just why throw him into a lion's den with Tank Davis in that regard. And even speaking on our last topic, we saw that Javonte last year, when he went up for defend his belt, he lost his title on the scales. Now, granted, he's come back and redeemed himself since then, and he won that fight where he didn't make the weight. But like I said, with Tevin Farmer, I guess I'll definitely give him a B-plus level fighter. But we know that Tank Davis, like you suggested, is definitely a level above him, especially with what Tank exhibited in his last couple of fights with that power and things like that. So, like I said, if I'm Tevin Farmer's team, yeah, we can build up to it, and that'd be a great fight to be on the East Coast, fan where and considering where both guys are from. They can put that at the Barclays Center for the first quarter of next year. That could definitely be a headliner. But like I said, for right now, let's just kind of make a couple defenses and get settled in before they put him in there with Tank.
Yeah, I don't see what the point would be for them to rush this type of fight between each other. I'd say that, you know, the talk should build a little bit more, even though some may seem that it can't really get any bigger than what it is now, considering that, you know, like you were talking about, both fighters being from where they're from. Javonte Davis, being from the Baltimore area, and you have Tevin Farmer, of course, being from Philadelphia. So you have a lot of, fans from that, the D.C. area, Maryland, and then in Philadelphia that would all come to see a fight of this magnitude. Right now I just think that, Tevin Farmer being able to build to the level that he's built over the course of his career, seeing that he kind of got robbed against, Kenichi Ogawa last year. And so they had to basically say, we'll give you a chance to get the belt again. And he was able to do that. And so I would say that, now you have that title, keep that title for a little bit, have a couple of fights defending that championship before stepping in there against Javonte Davis. Because if you, do that here at this point and you lose, and you could possibly lose badly, then it may take a good little while for you to get that shot once again after you worked so hard to get to the point to where you're at right now. So that's something there that you got to kind of, look out for. For those listening in now on the Golan Media Channel, you can call in 347-237-5539 to talk and have your take on boxing, or you could wait until the podcast is done. And it will be available on multiple platforms, including Blog Talk Radio, including Google Play. You'll have it on Spotify as well, and other podcast programs and apps that you can be able to access this anywhere on your phone, computer, laptop, tablet, anything like that. Continuing on, real quick before I go into like preview of what's in store next week, you also had a fight of note that happened in Phoenix, Arizona, as you had a heavyweight bout between Trevor Bryan and BJ Flores. This particular fight is of note because the World Boxing Association made a decision to have this fight between Trevor Bryan and BJ Flores for the interim WBA heavyweight title. Now, the WBA has been known to have multiple world or multiple champions. They have a WBA super champion, which is usually a champion that has a world title from another organization. You know, for example, Keith Thurman had the WBA super championship while he won the WBC welterweight championship from Danny Garcia. But, you know, since he's been out of commission, the WBC title has been stripped, but not the WBA. Of course, Anthony Joshua became WBA super champion after defeating Vladimir Klitschko. He already had the IBF championship, and now he has the WBO championship, while the WBA regular champion is Manuel Char. And they had an interim heavyweight champion at the WBA for a good little while, and his name was Luis Ortiz. But we all know what happened with Luis Ortiz, so we're not going to go into that in detail. Now, that interim WBA heavyweight championship is what or was put on the line with Trevor Bryan, you know, who was out there at 19-0. The key, you know, for those that had followed Trevor Bryan, he had been a you know, prospect there in the heavyweight division. You know, kind of been, you know, out there. Now he had came in there 19-0. Had like a few, you know, knockouts here and there. Had 13 knockouts, a couple of string of knockouts in his previous two fights, but he had his last fight back in December of 2017. Against a guy that had a record of 2-24. And his previous opponent before that had a record of 2-20. And yet he was able to fight BJ Flores for the interim world heavyweight title. That kind of bothered a person of note that's in journalism. I'm sure that many people know who that person is. And that spurred a response from the host of the Boxing Source radio show, as basically pointing out that the WBA isn't the only one that has done this type of thing, handing out multiple titles to different people. So if y'all follow the Boxing Source on Twitter, and you go back a couple of days, you'll be able to see the back and forth between the host of the Boxing Source radio show and this well-known journalist, analyst, or whatever it is. But in reference to this particular fight, Trevor Bryan, BJ Flores, Flores was, you know, someone who had came up from the cruiserweight division, did have like a couple of times where he challenged for the cruiserweight title, lost to Tony Bellew in 2016 by TKO, and then after that moved up to heavyweight and got a couple of wins at heavyweight. Now faced Trevor Bryan, and he basically got washed by Trevor Bryan. He was knocked down multiple times in rounds 3 and round 4, and the referee just said, hey, this is enough. Stop the fight. And so Trevor Bryan is now the interim WBA heavyweight champion. So I'm wondering what that would mean as far as like the rankings are concerned. Will this mean that Trevor Bryan will move up to, excuse me, to the number, I would say the number one position in the WBA? Not sure if that'll happen immediately, but it could eventually happen, because what's coming up in the future is, of course, Anthony Joshua facing Alexander Povetkin and Manuel Char facing Frederick Kendo. So the loser of those two fights will move down in the rankings, and Trevor Bryan will move up. But that was one thing of note that, you know, I wanted to get out of the way here before I, like, continued on with the boxing talk. Anything that you would have to say in reference to the WBA or whatever it is?
You know, just real quick, one at times we just wonder which organization is the most corrupt with amongst the sanctioned bodies. Typically, we look at British decisions from the WBC, and even right here, like the WBA. I mean, the first word that comes from mind is ludicrous. I mean, you sit back and look and dissect the guy's resume and see the type of people that he's fighting, and they enable him by pushing him up the rank. And like I said, when you take a closer look and dissect the resume, you really can't say anything but wow. You gotta be kidding. You really gotta be kidding. I mean, I think there's one fight that sits atop the WBC at heavyweight. We did this the last couple of years when we last year, you dissected his resume, and I think that was even someone that posted one of his early fights that was on YouTube against a Portland fellow and was severely overmatched. And it really I don't know how that happened to the match that Wilder took, despite the fact that earlier this year that guy second. But like I said, when you listen to these records and things like that,
competence, and it seems like here with having a fight between a guy that, you know, is undefeated but really didn't have any notable matches at all to become at the position or get to the position that he's at, to go up against, you know, a guy in BJ Forrest who, you know, wasn't, you know, didn't become a world champion in at cruiserweight. And, you know, also really didn't have any notable fights in the heavyweight division at all, to become, or to be placed in this position, to fight for an interim, world heavyweight title. But also on top of that, holding these belts, whether they're world championships or not, they have, you know, something behind it to where these fighters have to pay dues to the organizations in order to keep the belt. So it's like, okay, yeah, he's the interim champ, but now you're saying that he has to pay a little fee for, you know, him to keep that belt, if he's, you know, interested in having that belt or keeping that belt. So that's something that also has to be taken into account here when we're talking about these people that have these, you know, interim belts or regular titles or anything like that. That's something that has to be put into account. But here with this particular bite about, I just don't know why they had placed him or place those guys in a position to win an interim championship. So that's something that I wanted to, you know, get out of the way. Now here, real quick, we got about less than 10 minutes in the live session. If you want to listen in after 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time live, you could call in at 347-237-5539. That is 347-237-5539. Press the 1 key to get on queue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. All right. Next up is looking ahead to what's in store for Saturday, August 18th. There is a card over in Atlantic City that is headlined by heavyweights Brian Jennings against Alexander Dimitrenko. This is going to be at the Ocean Resort and Casino. And you'll also have Jesse Hart taking on Mike Wronski for the NABF Super Middleweight title. Shakur Stevenson is going to be part of that card as well, going up against Carlos Ruiz. And this fight card will be on ESPN. So it'll be top rank on ESPN Saturday, August 18th. But earlier in the day, live on BT Sport in Belfast, Northern Ireland, you're going to have a fight card where you have Carl Frampton going up against Luke Jackson for the interim. Once again, one of those minor belts, the interim WBO featherweight title, and you'll have Tyson Fury going up against Francisco Pianeta in Fury's second fight back since his 2.5-year layoff after winning the lineal, the WBA Super, IBO, IBF, and all the other belts that Vladimir Klitschko had. So this right here is pretty much a fight card of note because they just focus on what Tyson Fury is going to do against Francisco Pianeta, where, you know, Pianeta lost by unanimous decision in his last fight over in Munich, Germany. Now going up against Tyson Fury, and we're trying to see what the status of Fury is, you know, here. So I'm not sure what it I mean, we know what's going on as far as, like, this whole talk outside of the ring or whatever, like, this supposed to be or may be a fight between Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder. And, you know, the recent news of, you know, Showtime picking up this fight to be shown on their Facebook channel. So, you know, that kind of like is giving people some buzz as to a possible fight between Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury. But, you know, ever since they had talked about this fight potentially happening between Wilder and Fury, they haven't said that it was official yet. And it's been like over a week. So, you know, while you have Tyson Fury being picked up by Showtime in this particular fight card, I'm not sure what that means for a potential fight between Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury, especially if Tyson Fury is still at the physical state where he's not completely in shape as of yet, because he definitely wasn't in shape going up against Cephas Shaferi, and he didn't really need to be in shape for that fight because, first off, he was fighting cruiserweight, and second, he was fighting low-ranked cruiserweight. So he didn't really need to fully be in camp for something of that magnitude. So here against Francisco Pianeta, we'll have to see what his overall status is going into the ring against Pianeta and how he's able to handle business there. So that's a quick synopsis of that particular fight. Terrell, got any thoughts on this fight coming up here on Saturday and what it means for the future in the heavyweight division?
Yeah, got definitely have a lot to offer on that. And one thing I'm going to start with, I mean, that's obvious. We know Tyson Fury is not who he used to be 2 years ago. 3 years ago, whatever it was when he bought the last fall pistol. We knew that. And so we speak of him trying to be in physical shape, top physical shape, and definitely turn to top mental shape. We know he's not there. That's obvious. And I think in one of the groups that we participated in, I think people were trying to throw some negativity towards Wilder for potentially taking his fight. And for those same reasons that I just mentioned, that Fury is not who he is a couple years ago. We know that. But if you really look at this, this is really a perfect storm for both sides. And the reason why I say that, while Fury would get an opportunity to fight for a belt and try to regain what he was stripped of back in 2016, and Wilder has an opportunity to fight a great name for it. When I say great, I say that loosely because I'm not a total Fury fan. But still, Fury is, in a sense, the lineal chapter. He never lost in the ring. We know that. It was just sad to see him flame out the way he did with drug issues and things like that. So, but really, think about this: a perfect storm for both sides. Both of them get a bonus out of this. Wants to appear to fight for a title. If it does happen, and Wilder gets to fight a name, and then on top of that, Wilder will get out an opportunity to fight overseas and gain that exposure over there, which he desperately needs. One thing is kind of funny. I put a post on the page in regards to Wilder, Fury, and Joshua. And one of the guys, one of the people on the page made a comment saying that Wilder's a bigger draw. And I didn't get a chance to look at that.
Oh, man.
I just like the comment. I'm going to go back and give you some numbers in regards to gate numbers that both people have drawn. It's a plus side for both guys. It does happen. But once again, here we got a supposed negotiation that has been signed. So I'm not waiting for this Indiana fight to go on. I'm not sure if we'll see.
And it's just been like a lot of talking back and forth between, you know, what is, you know, happen with Frank Warren and him trying to get his name back into the promotional aspect of things, because over in the UK side, what a few people are saying is that, you know, Frank Warren really isn't the guy when it comes to promotions in the UK, and that, you know, he's kind of like having a lot of lackluster events, and, you know, those events aren't necessarily, being up to par as far as like putting things together. You know, either with his own fighters or with, you know, outside fighters. Yes, he does have, you know, a Tyson Fury, but Tyson Fury was a recent signee there. He has Carl Frampton, who has been a former world champion, and he does have Billy Joe Saunders, who's WBO middleweight champion. But, you know, other than that, he really hasn't come up with cards that have been, you know, very well received by the fans over in the UK. So, you know, with that, that is, you know, probably why some people feel that it took a good little while for Tyson Fury to have a first fight. And that fight ended up being up against Cephas Cifferi because there was no other heavyweight that they quote unquote felt was ready there, or that they didn't feel that Tyson Fury wasn't at the shape where he could actually fight someone that was in the welterweight division. So, you know, they kind of like gave Tyson Fury a little break there in his first fight back, going up against Cephas Cifferi. And so now they kind of bring him along slowly here, once again, with his fight against Francisco Pianeta, who did have a fight against Peter Malas in Munich, Germany, a couple of months ago. But, you know, he had like a 6-round fight before that. And then, you know, fought Kevin Johnson and got knocked out by Kevin Johnson in 2017. So, I mean, what you don't really know what level that Francisco Pena is in the heavyweight division himself. I mean, they got like ratings out here that put him very low on the totem pole, so to speak, for the heavyweight division. If people go into BoxRec, they'll see that Pena there is ranked in like 140 or something like that. You know, while, you know, Pena is like ranked within the 70th amount, you know, pretty much in the top 70 or something like that. But, you know, that's top 70. So what I'm trying to figure out is what is people trying to do as far as like trying to gauge the level of where Tyson Fury is at this point of his professional career, fighting a guy that isn't necessarily within, definitely is not a top 50 fighter. And if he's not a top 50 fighter, what makes people also think that he would be ready after this particular fight to fight someone on the level of Deontay Wilder, who has been active, you know, over the time that Fury has been inactive, you see? So that's the thing that we pretty much try to gauge is that, yeah, on paper, Fury and Wilder seems like a big matchup, but given that Fury has been out of commission for 2.5 years, had been, you know, had taken drugs, had been drinking a lot, and had gained over 130 pounds in that time off, that's very significant as a heavyweight. You know, given his age and everything like that, even though he's, you know, kind of young there as far as like overall heavyweights are concerned, he's, you know, 30 years old, but still, like, having that type of weight gain and then trying to get all of that off all at one point, that takes a lot out of you. And so I don't think that, you know, right now he's fully prepared to take on a fight of that magnitude against Deontay Wilder, especially not this year.
Well, you know, they got a phrase for that. They call that delusions of grandeur. That's what that is. Like I said, you know, piano guy, and even the last guy he fought, like I said, it does nothing for him. Nothing. I mean, just let alone that last fight, the size differential. I mean, that guy had nothing to offer against Fury in regards to to be a legitimate opposition. No, Fury, the guy didn't have no power. Too small, just too small. You know, he had regular boxing skills. So it was like he could just dance around and around Fury and befuddle him. That didn't happen. You know,
mm-hmm.
So it was pretty more or less an exhibition match. Pretty much like this Pena guy's going to be. Like it offers nothing for Fury, but when you're right, when you're smoking your own weed or whatever you want to call it, you know,
mm-hmm.
you're getting high on yourself, you're high off your reputation, and like you stated, when you're out for 2.5 years away from the sport, on drugs, on liquor, just living life at a furious pace, you lose all the mental reflexes, the physical reflexes, all that stuff goes away. And even though Tyson to begin with, Fury was never an athletic heavyweight to begin with. You know, he's just big as hell. You know, and with his
exactly.
skills. And like I said, for him to come back and put it out there that he wants to get in the ring with Wilder. Like I said, it's not a perfect situation. It's not pretty. But like I said, if you want to look past all of that, it's a good opportunity for both guys. They both have something, an eye on the prize that they can hope to get. But it really, if the fight does happen, I mean, I pretty much expect for Fury to get decapitated in the ring. You know, he's going to get embarrassed. You know, but at the same time,
yeah.
we are looking at the sport of boxing, and anything can happen in boxing. I'm not even suggesting that he would beat Wilder, but going overseas, fighting overseas, potentially things like that, you never know what could happen. I mean, we've seen many, many different things happen in the ring, particularly in the heavyweight division, particularly when there's a lot on the line, aside from money, things like that. So, but like I said, should he be fighting Wilder? No, he's not ready. Not ready. Nowhere near ready. He hasn't even shown us enough, like I said, from the last fight to this potential fight, too. It's ridiculous, but that's why we love boxing, for the story. So.
Yep. Yeah, there's, I mean, you know, a lot of box story that could, you know, come out of a potential fight between those two. They're able to, you know, get it done and pull it off. But like you were saying, right now, Tyson Fury is nowhere near ready to, you know, have a fight that would be considered a high-profile fight. And, you know, with that, you know, I kind of like see it to where it's only – something that builds buzz for both of those guys. But, you know, it seems like with, you know, Deontay Wilder, they kind of like do things out of from a public relations standpoint, in that they kind of like build up fighters that are supposedly, you know, good, but they're not completely, you know, at the top level or in top shape or anything like that. So it's going to be interesting to see if they actually do make this fight. But I'm not really seeing it coming to fruition, because they talked about it and they said it was going to happen. They said it was going to happen. They said it's pretty much like 90% signed or 99% signed or something else like that. But, okay, then, if it's 99% signed, then why haven't you signed it and made it official and, you know, had it, you know, actually happen, you know? So, to me, it just seems like it's not something to where he or they have made it official, like, you know, between Frank Warren and Shelley Finkel and everything like that. It seems like they've been trying to talk and talk and talk, saying that they've communicated and done this and done that. But when it comes to actual action, they haven't really done much of that. And so with that being said, I don't really see something to say that a fight between Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury is going to actually, it seems like they're just trying to put up some smoke and mirrors to actually give the pose that they're going to fight each other, but they're really not. And it's going to be, you know, something to where both parties are not going to look good. Either they're going to have to create a story that makes that particular fight, quote unquote, fall apart, or something to where, you know, either of those fighters say face in a sense. So that's what I pretty much like getting out of this. I'm not very confident that, I'm not very confident that the fight's going to happen, but I guess we're going to see after this week if they're really, you know, going to make it happen or not. So that's what I get out of that. So that's, you know, pretty much what I wanted to cover there on, you know, that particular fight card. Pretty much like went a little bit over time in this session of the Boxing Source radio show, but that kind of like covers most of what has happened, you know, over the course of the week. You did have the press conference over in Chicago by Metro Boxing USA announcing the fights that will be taking place on October 6th in the Wintrust Arena. As, you know, you're going to have, you know, Jesse Vargas as the feature fighter there going up against Thomas DeLorme. at welterweight, and you'll also have, you know, Archer Beterbiev defending the title against Callum Johnson, the IBF light heavyweight title. Daniel Roman will defend the WBA super bantamweight championship against Kevin McDonald, and Drill Big Baby Miller will be facing Tomas Hadebeck. So that's the fight card that's happening in Chicago on October 6th. So be sure to look out for that particular fight card out there. Is there anything else that you wanted to go through, Terrell?
No, I mean, kind of in regards to the card that you just made mention of, particularly of note, the Jarrell Miller fight, Tomas Hadebeck. Now, Hadebeck is a guy that's been around for a long time, who definitely made his mark in sport, particularly at cruiserweight, things like that, and kind of surprised a lot of people when he moved up to heavyweight. In a sense, like you talk about, I think it was the Travis Kaufman. So, I mean, Hadebeck, respected, but is he past prime? Definitely. And kind of what we talked about with the Kaufman guy, whatever, right? So why is Jarrell Miller fighting a Tomas Hadebeck up here in October? It's not a good look. It's not a good look. And I understand that he's with Design. I understand that. And I guess it's what they call their initial splash. It's not a whole lot of wow factor. We know that. But I'm not liking that fight at all for him. I mean, is it a showcase fight? He gets to fight a name. That's it. I mean, but what is he gaining? Like, there's skill wise that he can display. I mean, he's going to outweigh Hadebeck probably about 80 pounds or something like that. So just once again, it's just what we have in boxing. It's a shame, but nevertheless.
Yep, and to me, I think that, you know, this whole thing with that particular card, it's just something to, like, kind of, like, plant the seed there for Matchroom Boxing USA. I mean, people are expecting Matchroom Boxing to have an overall impact that's, you know, as big as or bigger than the likes of a top-ranked Golden Boy Promotions or someone that has been established in the U.S. for, you know, decades. And you're not necessarily going to get that. That's something that's going to be a slow process. On that one aspect. And the other aspect is, with this fight card being on the DAZN network, that's another thing that, you know, people are kind of like trying to dismiss when you've already just seen Top Rank leave HBO, in a sense, to move over to ESPN and now have their feature fights on ESPN+. So that is basically the pay-per-view type of channel that we're having now in this day and age in television, is that, you know, on-demand TV or stuff like that, like, you know, how they have YouTube Red or Netflix or, you know, Hulu. That's the type of television or programming that people are looking at right now, because they don't have the time to be in front of a TV sitting down and watching TV, and two, they're not going to be paying such and such amount for, you know, only a few, you know, channels that they usually watch. So it's like, why not just, you know, pay $4.99, $5.99, $9.99 a month, you know, for the, you know, for the channels that they do watch, you know, on a regular basis. So I think that's, this whole thing with DAZN is going to build itself over time and, you know, eventually become better off once more boxing programming and also MMA, because it's going to be part of the, you know, MMA is also part of that thing too. So that's going to be something else that they're going to be looking into with the DAZN network. So, yeah, that was one other thing that I didn't want to cover on the show. But with that, I think that covers, you know, everything that I could possibly go through for this particular episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show. Give a big thanks here for Terrell for calling in. We'll have our next episode on Sunday, August 19th, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Later on, you'll be able to catch this episode on Blog Talk Radio, on Spotify, on Google Podcasts, and other methods online. So be on the lookout for that. For the Go Long Media Channel, you can catch Cold Truth on Sports on Tuesday nights and Take This L on Wednesday nights. So be sure to catch that. And like I said, this pretty much covers everything I can do on this show. And like I say, at the end of every podcast here, the point of boxing is to hit and not get hit, not to stand and trade. On that note, I'm out. Have a good evening, everybody.
Thank you.